Welcome to the Mentoris Project podcast, covering mentorship, books, and more. In this podcast, we interview the authors of a series of books where we've met the men and women who mentored Western civilization. This is Dr. Roseanne Welch. For more information, visit mentorisproject.org. Our guest today is Nicole Gregory, the author of Bella Luna de Miele, Love and Adventure in Italy, Where All the Senses Are Awakened. It's a part love story and part travelogue. Bella Luna follows two American newlyweds as they breathe in the sights, sounds, aromas, tastes, and textures of Italy. Thanks for being with us today, Nicole.
Nice to be here, Roseanne.
I'm very interested in your characters. You've invented Bobby and Lisa, and Lisa's grandmother, who's inspired Lisa's interest in taking this once-in-a-lifetime trip to Italy. So I want to know what inspired you to include a dual-generation story.
Well, as you probably know, there's a lot of history in Italy, and there's a lot of veneration of the older generation. So I wanted the voice of an older person to kind of introduce and guide these two young people as they go through Italy to kind of bring up the history and make it come alive in terms of her family traditions, her family practices, the way she cooked, etc., so that the younger generation, these two young people who are seeing Italy and seeing all the sites, the story itself would have some background of history too.
I would have to ask you, was there someone in your life that Nonna is an inspiration from, or you used your own grandmother perhaps?
Well, I'll tell you, no, not really. But as I was researching the book, there were so many voices that came through to me from the older generation, people telling stories of the way it used to be. And there's, I mean, even though many of the traditions that are still going on in Italy were started, you know, centuries ago, we're aware of them, particularly cooking, but also art and also music. So I just wanted a voice to kind of guide us through. It wasn't someone particularly in my life who inspired me, but basically the voices of Italy itself.
It's an interesting idea to equate a country with a person in that way. I think that's really cool because it is the motherland.
Mm-hmm.
That's fun one. You also have the Nonna character, Nonna Nina, say that Italy is both old and new. So I kind of wondered where you were going with that and what influenced that.
There are so many great stories in Italy. And I mean, that's basically what Italy is when you travel through it. The old stories are just exciting to hear. And then there's just new. There's new life, new generations, new fashion, new music, everything. As I was digging through the research, I just came through these incredible stories, like the Stendhal syndrome in Florence, which was the writer Stendhal, after going through a museum, he actually stumbled and fell in a faint. He was overwhelmed by the art he'd seen. And that is a phenomenon that has been noticed in modern generations. When people see too much art, they can actually get dizzy, and people have been taken to the hospital in Florence, apparently, for this condition. So this was just one little gem of a story that came through. So it's old and new. It happened with Stendhal, the writer, and it's still happening now, apparently.
Oh, that's fascinating. I'll have to think if I've ever seen enough museums in a day for that to happen. That's a challenge for Americans.
Yes.
Interesting. Of course, I'm very interested because I've been to Italy 3 or 4 times, only to a couple of cities to visit relatives. So I wondered which of the cities in your book you may have had the chance to visit in your lifetime?
Oh, yes. Well, I've had kind of the Disneyland tour of Italy, meaning Rome, Florence, and Venice, and you can't go wrong. And I've been to Verona. I've been to a few other ones. There's nothing not to like about Italy. And as a place to stimulate the senses, it is to me, the ultimate country, because there's music, there's art, there's food, there's the beautiful landscapes, the great variety of landscapes, and incredibly, it's a small country. And so it's so rich. Well, I don't even know where to begin, but there's so much going on now. Like, for instance, there are a group of women in Florence who are restoring good art by women artists, digging it from the basements of museums to bring it out, because it was apparently in the Renaissance there were many female artists who were quite well known, and then in the subsequent decades or centuries it was hidden. And so these women are bringing it out, and museums are committed to showing it. So, you know, that was just one of the things that I found out about the modern Italy as I was writing the book.
How fascinating. When was your first trip to Italy?
My first trip to Italy was probably in the 80s. Yes, a long time ago.
That's beautiful. My first trip was in 2000, so.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent.
Well, it's really well preserved. They actually have something in their constitution that requires conservation. They know what they have, as far as I can tell. The Colosseum was recently restored with help from one of the fashion names. I just can't remember it off the top of my head. But there's a good effort to restore and conserve the antiquities of Italy.
There's a respect for them.
Total respect. Just like there's respect for old people there. You know, they have respect for their monuments as well.
We've hit on a couple things, but I'm really interested in sort of what was your favorite couple of finds along the way. The Stendhal story is really cool, but when you were studying the culture and thinking about this, what were the couple of stories you stumbled on? You're like, I've got to include that.
Well, one of them was the story about the mud angels, that in Florence there was this gigantic flood. And this is something that a lot of people just do not know. But there was a huge flood that was fast, and it filled up the basements of houses, museums, and churches. And so mud from the Arno was flooding into these buildings and threatening. I mean, it did cover a lot of art. And young people from all around Italy, but really all around Europe, just came spontaneously to Florence. And they formed chains, passing along books and artworks and, you know, sculptures to save it from the water. Around Florence today, if you look, you'll see these lines on the outside of buildings, and they mark how high the water got. And so this was a story, and when I talked to people, no one had heard of it. It was in the 60s. And then there was a movie made about it with Richard Burton narrating. Yes. But it's far enough in the past that a lot of people don't know about it. So that was a story I really felt needed to be told.
I love stories like that because I haven't heard that myself, and I felt like I've read a lot about Italy. Mm-hmm. So that's the beauty of a book like this. Even someone who's a fan will learn something new. Mm-hmm. That's so cool. Of course, I have to ask someone who's writing about Italy, how do you personally define la dolce vita for you?
Well, I look forward to a time when I can actually spend a long time in Italy, because I feel, again, I've experienced it as a tourist. And as a pretty superficial tourist, I have not spent more than a couple of weeks there. So my idea would be to really dig into one region and experience the food and the music and the landscape and the climate. But I think that what I experienced while I was there and what I learned again and again as I was researching the book is that the priorities of Italy, this is why Italy can be a transforming kind of country, because the priorities are really on enjoying life, having a nice food, eating in with your family, long meals, family meals, Sundays, you know, long Sundays, resting, vacationing. So their priority is very different than the American priority. I would look forward to spending time in one part of Italy. I mean, I couldn't say which part because there's so many great regions, but I would look forward to spending time in a region where I could really dig into that lifestyle.
I love that idea. I look forward to the same thing. And that is that comparison between the American workaholic and it's all about what you do and you define yourself. Someone once told me, in fact, my cousin in Italy said, if you ask a man in America what he does for a living, who he is, he will tell you what he does for a living. He's an accountant, he's a doctor, a lawyer. If you ask someone in Italy, a man, he will tell you who he's related to.
Ah.
That's his definition of himself, because that never changes, but your job can change.
Right. Interesting.
That was amazing to me.
Yes. I also read that there is a tradition in the way people do business in Italy that when they meet for lunch, it's their tradition. And if you break it, it's bad news. You're supposed to just talk about everything else but business until the last 5 minutes. So you talk about your family, what your kids are doing, where you've been on vacation, where you've eaten recently, so that there's a real connection. A human connection, and then the business is taken care of at the very end. Now, the bad part of that, apparently I spoke to an Italian who told me that the bad part of that is that people will do business with people that they know, that they have a personal connection with, which prohibits outsiders or newcomers from getting an entree into a certain business.
That makes sense. So they have to find a way to encourage that. Somehow,
yes, exactly.
Inviting in the new person and getting to know them.
Yeah, but there's a tradition of just working with who you know. and who, and maybe your cousin or who your cousin knows. So there's a good part of that and a bad part of that.
As with any culture.
As with any culture. And by the way, another a corollary to that is how many businesses are family businesses in Italy. I mean, just look at any business and you'll find that it's father, son, daughter, grandfather, daughter. That's an interesting aspect of Italian tradition.
It speaks back into this concept of respect, which reminds me to think about, as you looked at Italian culture at all these levels, what themes, what other things did you find sort of are part of the definition of that culture?
Very welcoming. They are actually welcoming to refugees. They're welcoming to tourists. So that was definitely an aspect that came through in all the stories. I think also there's a feeling that their treasures, particularly their art, should be seen by everyone. So they shouldn't be just, you know, the museum prices shouldn't be exorbitant and they shouldn't be hidden away, but that everyone should have access to the art and the treasures. So it's got a kind of a democratic, a slightly more democratic feeling than America does in that way.
To its belief and understanding of its art, right? To
yes.
Sharing what it has.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That makes perfect sense. We study the Renaissance all over the world.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And we don't necessarily study the art movements of many other countries.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really interesting that you wove those things into the life and the honeymoon experience of this fictional couple that you've invented.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think was the biggest lesson they learned on their trip?
Well, I was trying to have their relationship evolve on the trip as they were discovering Italy together, that their relationship was sort of finding its own ground. And so I wanted them to be learning about the weaknesses in each other and learning to accept the weaknesses in each other and rather than resist them or complain about them. And I think that what I wanted to show was that the generosity of the Italians towards them kind of helped them be more generous in themselves. I also had a little theme going in Lisa, the character of Lisa, where she was a psychology student studying resilience. So I wanted her to discover what makes Italians resilient. And so the themes of family and tradition came up in the people that they met and the people who fed them and people they engaged in conversation with. So I tried to do that in their relationship and in their discovery of Italy at the same time.
That's one of the things I enjoyed, watching them learn the personal lessons that came from the historic lessons.
Yes.
Too fun. Very fun. Also, of course, I noticed, as we mentioned art, you mentioned Caravaggio and Verdi and all these different people. There are so many people. How did you decide who were the most interesting of those folks you should highlight?
Pretty hard to do. Yeah, no, I just stories that jumped out that were kind of unusual or not that well known. I really liked it that the blind opera singer, I think his name was Bocelli, sang in the Duomo in Milan during the pandemic to an empty cathedral, but it was listened to by 20 million people around the world. So to me, that like is so Italian. And the fact that the Italians initially sang to each other on their balconies in the pandemic, that's the way of using music and song to communicate and to also inspire each other and to lift each other's spirits in that terrible, terrible time. So there were many stories that I learned about different artists that were just so, I tried to pick the ones that weren't as well known. And so there were a lot of, like Caravaggio is basically a criminal, but an excellent artist with very high standards. So to me, that was a fantastic combination. That's pretty well known, but I felt like it was fun to write about.
Definitely, he's one of the people we've studied a little bit, so that struck me. I have to say, just from a personal standpoint, I loved the Gina's three rules of going to a restaurant.
Oh.
That was charming and adorable, and I wondered where you learned that or where you picked
from
that
an
up.
Italian. Yes, of course. I got some tips from Italians. They helped guide me. For instance, I think this one fellow told me about when people go walking after their Sunday meal, and he said they really dress up because they know that everybody else is watching them. Not because they necessarily feel like they want to be dressed well-dressed, but they know that everyone is watching them. So they want to look good as individuals and good as families. And so dressing well is a high priority. You know, it doesn't mean dressing expensively. It just means looking very put together, clean, you know, polished, that sort of thing.
And good color coordination.
Exactly. A little cashmere, you know, a little pure linen, and you're good.
And not a tradition at all that we would say we have here. We don't walk much at all.
Not at all. Uh-uh.
Interesting.
No.
And they've hung on to that all these years.
Yes, yes. And because I think, too, the Sunday meal eating out, he also explained to me, is partly because so many women now work, they don't have time to do their Sunday meal. So restaurants have really stepped up and they create these nice brunches and then people go strolling afterwards.
I need to go back to Italy and do that quickly. Well, as always, one of the things about the whole Mentors project is this concept of mentors. And so because you have the grandmother character who is truly a mentor to Lisa, we always like to ask authors, who were your mentors in life?
Well, I knew you were going to be asking me that, and I thought that really the mentors in my life have been, I'd say in the last 20 or 30 years, have been books themselves. I'm a big reader. I love fiction and nonfiction, and I look to books for guidance, for inspiration, for distraction, for escape, for education, for enlightenment. I mean, I do turn to books whenever I kind of have a need. Yeah, I turn to books first. So I would say some of my favorite books have been my mentors in the last 20 or 30 years.
Well, I love that too. There are books on my shelf that when I just need it, I know there's going to be a lesson I have to go back to in them.
Exactly.
Well, mm-hmm. And the Mentors Project is full of books that are full of lessons for people. So thank you.
Mm-hmm.
This has been lovely. Thank you for coming today.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Mentors Podcast, sponsored by the Barbera Foundation, whose mission is to promote positive change by inspiring others to engage in their community. Your host has been Dr. Roseanne Welch. Our music was composed by Patrick Abate, technical direction by Douglas E. Welch. For more information and to read more about the great mentors in history, visit mentorsproject.org and join us for our next conversation.